back like we never left. It's Double Move Sports. What's up, everybody? For most of you all, if you're still around, if you're watching this video, you probably know me. I'm Steph. Been doing this Double Move Sports thing for a long time. I'm back today with 2024 rookie rankings for Superflex Dynasty Leagues. This is coming from spending time in the lab, on the analytics side, on the film side, workshopping takes with the Discord channel, with all the boys in the community. But I wanted to hop on here first before diving into these rankings and just talk about the state of the union when it comes to Double Move. So this is a soft reboot. This is a soft reboot of the channel. My boy Alex is gone. But the Dynasty space had to reel me back in. Okay, I haven't posted much in the last, call it, year and a half. I've done a couple things here and there, a couple little live streams going live when the moment is perfect. But the amount of Dynasty content I've seen on YouTube, on Twitter, across social media, so many of these rookie takes are vibe takes and are nothing burger if he gets the draft capital takes that I can't handle this. Like, I need the firepower. I need people to have conviction in this space. Shout out to all the Dynasty content creators that do have the conviction that aren't going to just wait and rely on draft capital. There's no point in making content or even being a quote-unquote fantasy football analyst if you're just going to let draft capital drive everything. What are we even doing here? Just don't look at anything till draft day and then make your picks based off of draft capital. So I want to get into takes on this class. I do have assumptions about draft capital that are included, but I'm also the more I've played Dynasty, the more I've started to see that draft capital doesn't matter as much as people think. Yes, it's still the number one correlator to fantasy success, but we talk about all the time how it gets double counted by testing when you see a guy who blazes a 40 with no business going in the first round, ending up in getting that draft capital like a Kadarius Toney, like a Henry Ruggs, like a John Ross going top 10. Goodness gracious. And we just saw a year where draft capital was very, very overhyped. I mean, do I need to say Puka Nacua? Do I need to say some of the deep names in this class that have delivered for us? I mean, Mingo busted out, Marvin Mims busted out, but you had Jaden Reed in the second round. You had, you know, QJ busting. Like, it was all over the place. I mean, we're coming off a year like a fifth round receiver. Let it sink in right now. Is like a top seven dynasty wide receiver in 2024. And Tank Dell was another guy, day three pick that just balled out. I think he went third round, but regardless, I want to dive into these rankings. We'll throw them on screen now. I'm just going to talk through top to bottom. I'm just going to start rambling on these rookie rankings. I have a full four rounds posted in the Discord channel. I keep them up to date. I think I've posted new rankings once a week or so at this point since January. So I've been in the lab on these guys, always adjusting to new information. Obviously, the combine changed a lot. Mock drafts continue to change, even though I'm trying not to over-index on those. And where I'm at now in my process is getting into the film. I'd say right now I'm 70%, maybe 80%, let's just say 80% analytics, numbers, box scores, game logs, like looking through and researching the performance of these prospects against the best competition, putting things in context around some of their target shares and yards per route runs and all the high level metrics that everyone will look at, right? The box scores, the yardage totals, things like that. So taking it a step deeper on the number side, and then now I've gotten to the film stage. And so I can drop some of those takes in here as well. But we all know Caleb is the 101. Now, one question I know I'm going to get, I always get, it's the not even a question, right? It's pushback, which is, why do you have the big three QBs over the big three wide receivers. And it hurts me to do this, but looking at it through just like cold, hard, clinical perspective, quarterback values, especially of the caliber of prospect we're talking about with these guys, the big six, you could throw the big seven, eight, let's just say the big eight in this class, are all really, 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 really good prospects that we can all feel good about not busting. This is going to be a fun fantasy class. I'm sure one of them will bust or have a slow onboard into the league. But these are all really, really, really good prospects. I cannot stress that enough. But when we look at really good quarterback versus really good wide receiver, we're talking about super flex dynasty leagues. Quarterbacks score more points and have stronger value insulation than wide receivers. There's less things that can go wrong in terms of, you know, wide receivers are so reliant on pace of play and target competition and scheme versus QBs touch the ball every play. If you want to take Marvin Harrison, even 101, like honestly, I will not debate you. I understand. But just looking at it purely from, okay, think about a year from now in a dynasty startup, if all of these guys hit, who's going ahead? It's probably going to be the quarterbacks that are going in that range that we just saw from guys like Justin Herbert jumping into the top seven in most Superflex Dynasty League startup drafts. Anthony Richardson is going at the 1-2 turn and has done nothing. Trey Lance was going at the 1-2 turn after he had done nothing. So even if like a Caleb Williams gets hurt this year, he's still going to go at the 1-2 turn. And he's already going at the 1-2 turn in 12-team Superflex startups. So, and we see it with DJ Stroud. We saw it with Joe Burrow. We saw it with Lamar, like Josh Allen, Jalen Hurts. Everything goes out the window once you're a productive quarterback in the league. Most of what we're going to talk about today is two-year windows. If you want to look longer than that to be some kind of tiebreaker, sure. But most of the time, we're looking for sell windows, right? We're looking for value accrual. We're looking for guys that can help me win a championship or help me make my roster better through trades. And getting edges over my opponents in my leagues. All right, so that's the rundown of why I have the QBs over wide receivers. We also have to look at, you know, New England as a landing spot for a QB potentially. The New York Giants is a landing spot with one of the wide receivers. So maybe landing spot can be a tiebreaker. More likely than not, at least for me, I'm probably just going to keep the big three QBs 1, 2, and 3 unless just one of those landing spots are just next level horrible, because the fantasy points per game and the way the dynasty market treats quarterbacks in Superflex. And that's another, the same thing with wide receiver. And that's why later in this draft, we'll talk about it. I have guys like Keon Coleman, Troy Franklin, Adonai Mitchell over these running backs that actually I would say have safer profiles. But because the receivers have such a market in dynasty, as of right now, when I don't know landing spots, I don't know if these guys are going to get draft capital, specifically for running backs, that really, really matters. I still have my evaluations on these guys, draft capital aside. But when we're talking about wide receiver versus the running back position, we just did a dynasty startup 2 weeks ago. And in the first five rounds, we had 24 wide receivers and 10 running backs go. There is an appreciation for the wide receiver position in dynasty right now, unlike maybe any that I've seen since I've been playing seriously since 2016 in fantasy football. So that's the rundown positionally. I'm happy to dive into it more if you hit the Discord or even in the comments Discord's probably the best way that I'm going to see it. Plus, you'll have more folks that can give their feedback as well. And you guys can all put clown emojis under my post if you don't agree. How about that? I thought about just skipping Caleb here and just getting into other players before I hit record. But I think I haven't talked about Caleb much, so I want to do that on at least – I want to at least have it on wax. And so his player archetype to me is that young Brett Favre or prime Deshaun Watson. He's the closest thing to Patrick Mahomes that we have seen. Not only did he have the gaudy numbers, right, the 4,500 yards as a sophomore, the 3,600 yards as a junior. He has magical, otherworldly elite awareness of what's going on in the football field, of where his receivers are, of where the pass rush is coming from. Like, the game just runs in slow motion for Caleb Williams. He's a guy that, yeah, his numbers are great. And then once you turn on the tape, you're like, mind is blown. Because you could take the big plays of any other QBs, I mean, that we've seen in the last couple classes, probably since like Trevor Burrow. Maybe you could throw Anthony Richardson. But like dudes that when you look at their peak, it's otherworldly. It's unfathomable. It's like, this guy is going to break fantasy football. He's going to break football. You know, fantasy-wise, you just need him to be efficient. And Caleb then gives you the safety, which is what you want at the start of your super flex rookie drafts. So you want that safety where, hey, I've been rebuilding. I just tanked for the 101. You really, really, like, having that pick be a bust is going to set you back even farther, and you have to rebuild again. So just take the safe option. Take the guy that has the name cachet, the 101 chalk. Like, he's going to get an opportunity. Even if he stinks, he'll still have the Baker Mayfield floor, if you see where I'm going with that. But Caleb 101, he's just insane. I have Jayden Daniels over Drake May for a couple of different reasons. Let me say this first. If I was a GM, right, if I'm the Washington Commanders, I almost said Washington football team. If I'm the Washington Commanders, I'm taking Drake May because he has all the tools that you need. He has the size. He truly is that Josh Allen, Mitch Trubisky type of guy where you see the erratic plays, but I believe he can clean that up in college. And people aren't going to care about his throwing mechanics when he's putting up 300 yards in a losing game script for New England or wherever it is he goes, right? So, or, you know, Minnesota, which I think people get excited about. But for May, I would take him if I was a GM. But for fantasy football, Jayden Daniels, one, has to me, he's more pro ready. Obviously, he played 5 years in college, so you would assume just off of that alone that he is more pro ready. But you also see that in the numbers, in the way he's gotten better every year, how amazing his 2023 was. But then also on his tape, led the league in yards per attempts in 2023, or led the country. He has that Justin Fields rushing prowess. The thing with Jayden Daniels, and this goes back to my first comp after I ever watched any tape on Jayden, was tall Kyler Murray. If you took Kyler Murray and just kind of stretched him out vertically, that's you get Jayden Daniels, because he's a guy that it's either is the big play there, I'm going to take off. And that's what you saw, a 48% rush rate on blitzes for Jayden Daniels. He's a guy that if the off-script stuff is required from him, based on what we saw in LSU and based on what the numbers tell us, he will struggle a bit. He's a guy that, and right, go now we have the Cliff Kingsbury, which, you know, felt pretty good to have the Kyler comp there, and now it's Cliff Kingsbury in Washington, who's probably, you know, as of right now, right, recording on April 6th, 2024, as of right now, Jayden Daniels is the chalk 102 to Washington. So I like that comp more and more. One I added in more recently was skinny Jalen Hurts. They're kind of the same guy as Kyler, where it's like they're the rushing guys, but they're not necessarily the best guys off script, but they do have the arm strength to throw deep downfield. But there could be some weird consistency stuff if they get into a bad matchup or a tough game script with a defense that is throwing them for a loop. You can see them start to struggle, but for the most part, these guys are safe. Jaden Daniels is so safe from a fantasy football aspect. We looked through rushing QBs drafted over the last couple of years. Outside of like Johnny Manziel, the last true bust outside of, so Trey Lance, Johnny Manziel, and then you have to look back as far as like Jamarcus Russell to really find a pure, like a true rushing quarterback that was taken in the first round that completely failed and just didn't have a sell window. Like Tim Tebow had a sell window. Justin Fields has had multiple sell windows. Ryan Tannehill had a sell window. RG3 had a sell window. It's just, these guys are not going to completely bust versus if May comes out, throws a couple picks, right? Maybe has that Bryce Young experience where they got to sit him for a week because he needs to just reset. Like that, that's in a range of outcomes. Even if he did go to Washington, that's just the type of player he is. I still love Drake May. Don't want to, like, I don't want this to seem like I'm anti-Drake May in any way. If you want to put him 102 over Jaden, fine. To me, it's just, hey, we don't need to take the upside swings quite yet. That's something we can wait for on the second round. Then you have the big three receivers. There's been so much talk of these guys. The only thing I'll say that you probably haven't heard before, it's a little, you know, against the echo chamber. And why I had to hop on the and record today, man. It's just the echo chamber takes are just egregious right now. Marvin Harrison Jr., the one thing you could say against him, and I almost discount this a little bit because of how much double coverage he got, but the yards after catch and the missed tackles forced, what he's doing with the ball in his hands, essentially, is not the best. And this, and that's an area where Neighbors is really, really good. So just wanted to at least throw that out there. And then J.J. McCarthy. J.J. McCarthy is a guy I like. I do not think he's as good as the big three. I don't think he should go top 10. He seems like a perfect guy that goes in the Mac Jones, Kenny Pickett draft range. But what you have to like with J.J., outside of all the volume stuff, right? He didn't pass a ton at Michigan. He had games with less than 20 pass attempts. But what you did see, even against top competition for J.J. McCarthy, is when they needed clutch third downs, when they needed touchdowns, when they needed game-winning drives, like he just delivered clutch play after clutch play. The efficiency is best in this class, honestly. On a per-attempt EPA basis, J.J. McCarthy was the best in this class. That doesn't guarantee fantasy football success, but at least what I'm banking on with McCarthy is that he's not going to be this completely unstartable, unusable, no-sell window bust. And then you're seeing him now getting mocked top five. So then it's like, okay, great, even more insulation. And that's the insulation that I want to take over Brock Bowers. Again, I really don't want to bust with these picks early in my Superflex rookie draft. I will take the safer plays in the first round because I don't want to completely ruin a rebuild or light a first round pick on fire when those are so valuable. You're usually trading up to get those picks if you didn't do the rebuild thing during the season. I just paid up for the 101 and posted that trade in our Discord channel and the Dynasty Trades channel. Happy to talk values, answer questions, and just workshop these takes. But Bowers at the 108 is there because, I mean, generational tight end prospect, but at the end of the day, tight ends don't score fantasy points. Tight ends are more reliant on their situation. So that's why I'm discounting him behind J.J. McCarthy. I know it's a hot take to a lot of people. If you're in some kind of crazy tight end premium, sure, take him a spot or two higher. But tight end is not the position to chase. You guys know this. If you've watched the show for any sort of time, I don't build my rosters around tight ends. When it comes to dynasty, it's, hey, I'm ready to contend off of a rebuild. I will go pay up for a win now tight end. I'll start Evan Ingram this year until week eight, and then I'll trade for David Njoku when it gets hot with Joe Flacco late in the year and try to push for a fantasy championship. That's the approach for me. Or, hey, my roster is absolutely perfect, minus the tight end. Well, then I'll go s sell some draft capital, go get a Mark Andrews who's dirt cheap right now, or go get a Travis Kelce. Over the last couple of years, I probably wouldn't do that right now, but over the last couple of years, that was always the play, was to just go pay up for a guy, put the cherry on top. I know we had Laporta with the good rookie year and Kyle Pitts. Yes, Kyle Pitts had the 1,000 yards. And Bowers is great. Elite, generational, best tight end prospect. I'm fine to say best tight end prospect we've ever seen for what he was able to do. 17.4% target share as a freshman, 16.7% as a sophomore, 20.4% as a junior after having a high ankle sprain, which required tight rope surgery. It's insane. I put the comp as Kyle Pitts traits in Evan Ingram's body because size-wise, he doesn't have quite that receiver-ish build as a Kyle Pitts will have. Definitely has the more Ingram body type, but his yak ability, his separation ability, his blocking is all better than Ingram, honestly. Just really, really good. After Bowers, I think is where the draft starts. Maybe you could count it one pick later because Brian Thomas does seem to be the chalk right now. And the thing with Brian Thomas is the range of outcomes, you start to dip into guys that were good number twos. We have not seen enough right now from Brian Thomas of his ability to get open in the short and intermediate levels of the field. That's where he struggled. Now, they had Malik Nabers in that offense at LSU playing next to Brian Thomas, so they didn't ask Brian Thomas to play that role too much. So that's where it's one of those things, did we just not see it, or can he not do it? That's where you get to with Brian Thomas. My comps for him are DeVante Parker and Michael Crabtree, which are like solid outside receivers. You don't think of them as like a Stephon Diggs or like Antonio Brown, DeVante Adams, like route runner type, but they're outside guys that can make big plays. You get them against a team with a soft alpha corner, and Brian Thomas is going to torch them. And that's what he did for an entire year at LSU, next to elite competition against SEC defenders, tested insane. Not that you should really chase testing with receivers. It's always a mistake. But the thing with for me with Brian Thomas is he's not a guy I'm going to sell the second things start to go south. To me, he's a guy you draft him and let him bake. And then you see if his second year in the league, he pops off. So if people start to get down on him, be willing to go and buy Brian Thomas. It's not like, I mean, he would have to perform Quentin Johnston levels of bad for me to pivot from that because he looks like a guy with a monster ceiling in the league. Now at 10, I put Worthy here. It terrifies me, to be honest. I've been high on Worthy every step of the way. I've had him firmly behind Brian Thomas just because you can't look at his numbers and say anything bad about them, other than the fact that his target shares decreased every year from 30%, which 30% as a freshman, goodness, 28% as a sophomore. But he had Jatavion and Bijan in that offense. And that was also when Quinn Ewers took over, who's terrible. Everyone's already talked about it a ton because they finally dug into the Texas tape and realized Ewers is absolutely garbage. And then you had Adonai Mitchell, who came in with a lot of hype as a true junior as well, with an 18% target share, lowered Worthy from that 30% to 28% to 26.5% as a junior, but that's still phenomenal. And then you add in the fact that Worthy led the country in punt return yards as a junior. He's been versatile with 30 and 40% slot rates. He was sixth in yards after catch per reception. This is the guy, the way he moves, I won't make this comp as players, but the way he moves is very Tyreek Hill-esque. The way he stops and starts, and the way that like he'll be running downfield and he'll just hit the brakes, everyone flies by him, and he's taken off across the field. But the things like that are so cool to see with Worthy. And you think about first round draft capital he's probably going to get. The comp that I've felt the best with truly for Worthy would be a Hollywood Brown, even though I think they win in different ways. And Worthy is way more gadgety, I would say, than Hollywood Brown. Which is why also in the range of outcomes, I do have Rondale Moore. So it's just like a, hey, a guy that was really good in college, broke out as a freshman, but small, probably going to get hurt in the league, isn't a guy that you're going to rely on as your alpha wide receiver one. So Worthy is a guy that you hope lands in the perfect situation where he doesn't need to play a pure deep threat role. He's a guy that they can put him in the slot and let him run slot fades and just torch everyone. A guy that they'll scheme up in the offense, a guy that will be used on special teams. That's where, and then you hope he can develop from there into that like Tyreek Hill type of guy. But when we talk about the size, it doesn't scare me a ton. The size is relatively comparable to Devonta Smith if you want to go there. I think he looks more like a Hollywood Brown. I mean, he's tiny. Worthy is tiny. But in some ways, I don't know. He's so fast that it's like maybe the fact that he's smaller, it's harder to get a hand on him. And he's so jittery with the ball in his hands. It's pretty nuts what Worthy's able to do once you get him the ball. And he had the numbers to prove it. He had the breakout. He had the special teams. Like, there's not anything you can say, but he had the yards per out run, 2.21 career yards per out run. Like, just good. There's excuses. His sophomore year, when he had the high drop rate, he had a broken hand and had an insane 17 yard A dot. So it was deployed purely as a deep threat. That's not going to be his game. He's not going to win at X. If you, I've seen people trying to tear down Worthy because they look at his film when he's out wide against, let's just say an Alabama game or just against elite defenders, even the Washington game. Like when they would line Worthy up outside and ask him to win against press coverage, it's not going to happen. But you know that with Worthy going in. And this is the best version of, this guy. I know we just saw Tank Dell get there, right? Undersized, but a guy that blazed, a guy that gets open all over the field, a guy that has some of that gadgety stuff, a guy that's probably going to be a number two his entire career. He's probably never going to be the wide receiver one for a team. He has had Nico Collins in the case of Tank Dell. That's what you're banking on for Worthy, where he can be this fantasy rich player, but not like a franchise type receiver that you just, make him the face of your passing game. He's a weapon in the passing game. So you hope he goes somewhere where someone's going to use him the right way. After this, I get into Keon Coleman and Troy Franklin, which are guys that both have red flags. They're wildly different players. Here's the thing with Keon Coleman, and it's funny that the reception perception from Matt Harmon just came out on Coleman and actually reiterated a lot of the takes that we already had, which just makes me feel even better about him. What Coleman showed with the slow 40 time, that I think that really exposed him as a player in actually a good way. Like we were able to see what he is. Because if he had ran that Brian Thomas type 40, we might be looking at him very differently. But honestly, Keon Coleman, the comps I have are Alshon Jeffrey, Courtland Sutton, Dontavian Wicks. Which these are guys that didn't have blazing 40s. They're not burners, but they're big. And they can win all over the field. The burst from Coleman, right? The vertical and the broad jump were fantastic given his size. So that's a guy, he has some explosiveness. It's just not 40 time. It's not getting 0 to 60 in 2 seconds. That's not where Coleman's going to win. But you think of other guys that had this type of profile, you're thinking of the Amon-Ra St. Browns, where they didn't have the blazing 40, but they were good in college. They did show the burst. They're strong players, good size, great BMI. With Coleman, we're talking about a guy who's 6'3", 213, put up a 22.7% target share next to Jaden Reed as a junior, true junior at Michigan State. And essentially repeated that same year with 22.4% target share as a junior. He did struggle with separation. That's not anything I'll debate. But there is something, and shout out to our boy Nikki in the Discord. Longtime DMS supporter, friend of the show. Nikki did an analysis on Jordan Travis in that Florida State offense. And Jordan Travis, I'll put it on screen, but to put it bluntly, to summarize for you, Jordan Travis was horrible at throwing to the outside at Florida State. And you saw Johnny Wilson struggle with this as well, who was in that same offense with Coleman. And then you saw Coleman struggle with it. My thing is, look, even if, let's just say Coleman struggled a bit, right, with separation, sure. How much of that was underthrown or just way off passes that Coleman had to come back and get? And that's what you see all over the tape. But regardless, Coleman is not a guy that you want to deploy as a downfield, like field stretcher, any sort of way, even as an X or a stretch Z or a big slot, whatever you want to call him. Regardless of the role he plays, he's not a burner type guy. He is a short to mid intermediate game, which is why I do have, you know, the Alshon Jeffrey comp on there, or even the Dontavion Wicks. Like, these are big guys that aren't asked to play as field stretchers. And the version of that that works is George Pickens. Because if you look at Keon Coleman, he never drops. He was number one in contested targets, but he has a super low drop rate. I would say the best contested catch guy in this class, if you can put Odunze over him, that's fine. But Coleman's right there in terms of just what he can do contested catch-wise. And then you add in the fact that Coleman did have special teams usage. He is an early declare. That's a profile that I think people are relying on what we've looked at the past couple of years for evaluations, and was part of my process as well, which is, can he get open? Can he separate? But when you think about guys like George Pickens, Mike Evans, T. Higgins, these guys aren't elite separators, right? They're these boom bust, big body receivers. And that's exactly what Coleman profiles to be in the league. He does have N'Keal Harry comps in his range of outcomes, which are terrifying. But he doesn't have the QJ comp because he can actually catch the ball. And this is a guy that's been successful young. Like, he has the early breakout age. He's done it at two programs. I think Coleman's done enough. He's done certainly more than QJ as a prospect. So I feel good at, like, Coleman could be that kind of Nico Collins type guy. Another Texans comp. We're making all those Texans comps with Worthy and Coleman today. But Coleman, it looks like I'm just going to be a guy that I'm above consensus on. And I didn't think it would be like that when I started diving into this class aggressively back in January. Because we saw Coleman start in this range, and then everyone started to see some of the separation stuff, the slow 40, and now he's like mid to late second round, which to me is just insane. So I'm back in on Coleman. I think I've seen enough. I've workshopped this enough. The numbers bear it out. The tape bears it out. Keon Coleman is, like, the ceiling is Michael Thomas. So I'm into that. Troy Franklin is kind of the opposite guy. His high-end comps are honestly pretty scary, and that's why I do have him behind Worthy and Coleman. I know some people want to have him up. We'll get into Adonai here in a minute, but Troy Franklin is a guy that profiles like a Jameson Williams, like a Robbie Anderson. The Robbie Anderson one gets brought up all the time. Will Fuller is another one. So, you know, high ceiling names, boom bust names. I've had the DJ Chark comp on him, which I see a lot now on the timeline, which is great. But for Troy Franklin, him being an early declare, 20.6% target share as a sophomore, 26% as a junior, and all the efficiency metrics, whether you want to look at yards per route run, wins against man, yards after the catch, like Franklin checks all of those boxes. I do have some concerns about the offense that he was in, you know, getting very schemed up. I do have concerns about the Pac-12, but the ceiling for Franklin is there. If he could be, you know, what we wanted DJ Chark to be, right? If he could be more of that, we'll call it AJ Green type of guy. I'm not saying they're comp to each other, but that's the archetype of player that you're looking at for a Troy Franklin, a go up and get it, high point, field stretcher X type of guy. And even DJ Chark had a sell window. He has a wide receiver 17 season in Jacksonville. So for a guy that's getting mocked and I have him projected to go second round, I can talk myself into Franklin. We'll see once these running backs and quarterbacks, and that's something you see in my process. All right, draft capital doesn't matter as much for receiver as much as it does for running backs and quarterbacks. But that's why I would not debate it if after the draft, depending on, you know, once we actually do see the draft capital for these guys, as well as landing spot, we know the Chargers are a great running back landing spot. Dallas is a great running back landing spot. It's a couple others I like as well. Vegas is low key wide open. Zamir White, Alexander Mattison. I don't know. So Jonathan Brooks, Trey Benson, what if you want to put them over Franklin, I won't debate it after the draft. Same thing with Bo Nix and Michael Penix. If you want to put them, honestly, right behind Brian Thomas, maybe even ahead of Brian Thomas after the draft, if assuming, right, they go top 15, I won't debate that at all. And that's probably where you'll see the biggest shift in my pre- and post-draft rankings is with Benson, Brooks, Nix, and Penix. Adonai Mitchell is the guy that I can't. I want to fall in love. I just can't do it. 14% target share in the deepest offense of all time in Georgia, where they had Ladd McConkey and Brock Bowers and all these other guys. And then he was hurt for six. He only played six games, and that did as a sophomore. Transfers to Texas, gets lined up exclusively outside and as a deep threat with a 15.6 career A dot, 18% target share at Texas. 18% is not, it's not like egregiously horrible. The targets were there, but if you look at the game logs for Adonai Mitchell, it's terrifying. If you look at his efficiency, it's terrifying. He would be a massive statistical outlier. Adonai Mitchell would be if he delivered, if he hit. Like, this is a guy, he gives you nothing after the catch downfield based on what he did in college. The production is terrifying. Jatavion Sanders, a tight end, ate Adonai Mitchell's lunch money. And I know the testing was elite. I know the elite. I mean, one of the best RAS scores we've ever seen was Adonai Mitchell. But it's terrifying. Why did he not use his abilities at school? And, you know, I have him at the 201, and that's a gamble on he can clear up the laziness, which has been reported a bunch. If he knows he's not getting targeted, he just doesn't try. So that's scary. But even that aside, I can live with that. Let's just say that gets cleaned up, right? Because now he's, you know, money on the line, got to feed his kids. I guess, I mean, NIL-wise, probably already had that excuse. Regardless. All right, let's say he can clean that up. And let's say, okay, his production was bad because he was hurt, and he did have the 14% target share as a freshman, which is pretty impressive. My range of outcomes is Terry McLaurin to De'Ami Brown for Adonai Mitchell, which is you got a solid wide receiver one. Maybe not, you know, a super high elite ceiling, but like a very good wide receiver one in fantasy football. A guy that's going to be flirting with like top 15 when things go right for him and he develops and he hits. I don't see the Justin Jefferson stuff with Adonai Mitchell. Get that out of here. And this guy could easily, like, this could be a Kayshon Boutte level bust where it's like he just doesn't try and then gets into camp and still kind of doesn't try and the team hates him and he just never gets on the field. That's in range of outcomes for Adonai Mitchell as well. So we have the two running backs. I talked about Trey Benson and Jonathan Brooks on our last show, which was a mock draft. My comp for Trey Benson is Joe Mixon or Antonio Gibson. The testing for me is what saved Trey Benson, and we kind of knew that he would get there because he did hit 20-plus miles per hour a couple times last year. But there's some stuff, like he's had a bad injury in the past. He's dealt with injuries. He's, you know, a late declare who had to transfer out of Oregon. So there's some stuff with Trey Benson that's like muddies the profile. But overall, this is a guy that I think can be a workhorse. And I think if he goes second round somewhere, especially like a Dallas, it's going to be pretty chalky to call him the workhorse there. His value is going to skyrocket. And I think he'll deliver. I think he's a good runner on the ground. Has some things to be desired in the passing game. Jonathan Brooks, super high upside, looks great. Miles Sanders, Dalvin Cook type of comps, DeAndre Swift comps come up with Jonathan Brooks. He does look like that dude, but he had the ACL tear week 10 of the college football season. Still early declared, so I'm like, okay, maybe the NFL said they'd still be in on him. Did have a 9% target share, but really only played that junior year because he was sitting behind Roshan and Bijan and all these studs at Texas. They leave his junior year. He goes to nuclear for 10 games, and then it's over. So it's like the sample size on this guy is egregiously small. We don't get any testing, so there's some stuff that I'm worried about. And anytime there's an injury, it's worrisome. So discount him a little bit, but I still think he'll be good. We have guys like Kendre Miller and Travis Etienne that show us that the running back values can hold if they don't play that first year. After that, we have the QBs. These are guys I don't love, Bo Nix or Penix. Honestly, they're not great downfield throwers, and that's like the main thing that you need if you're not going to be a rushing QB. And there's definitely things to like, but essentially you need these guys to land in situations where they're going to get volume. And hope pray the efficiency is there. Michael Penix struggled with the efficiency. That's why I'm slightly lower on him. Penix has a little bit more mobility. Doesn't have the scary injury stuff that Penix has. And is a little bit more pro ready because he has been in college a little longer. And has done, I would say, done well for 2 years straight at Oregon. Looking pretty darn good at the college game. So I'll bet on Knicks if I have to, but you're really just praying that one of these guys goes top 15. And there's that range of Vegas, I think Seattle, and Denver. And technically Minnesota, right in that range, right at that 11 to 15 range. So that's what you're praying for here. I'll be a lot less excited if they fall out of the first round than you're looking at like a Will Levis, which is just you're praying. I like the tier of guys after this, and this is where we get into upside swings. I'd say this is when you get into true ceiling plays the rest of the way. Javon Baker is a guy that you have excuses why he didn't do much his first 2 years in college, but when he was out of Alabama and that insanely stacked wide receiver room at Bama, he goes to Central Florida, goes to UCF, right away as a junior, is playing a featured role, 22.4% target share, and then just improved on that as a senior, 24.9% target share. It's no wonder he never broke out at Bama because he was behind Devonta Smith, Jalen Waddle, John Mechie. But this is a guy I want because you can build the narrative very easily about why he didn't succeed at Bama. We saw the same thing happen, actually. It's kind of funny, it was at Bama, but like with Jameson Williams, right? Didn't do anything for 2 years. Blows up, gets the first round draft capital after his junior year. those are, there's things about that type of profile to like. Jerome Ford was kind of like this as well, actually, from Bama, where it's like he was stuck behind Brian Robinson and Najee. He transfers to Cincinnati, goes nuclear for 2 years. There's things to, like, you can make reasons why a guy wouldn't succeed at Bama, but so that's why I want to bet on Javon Baker. Ladd McConkey, he's to me, he's just a little bit of a black box. He redshirted his freshman year, so he's, I know he's played 3 seasons, technically a senior. He was hurt all the time. Best season was a 15.5% target share. He has, target competition excuses that you can make for him, but it's just, it's a lot of excuses to get there with Ladd. But at least you have the testing. You have the 200 special teams yards in his first 2 years. And with, the type of player that he is, it's the range I have on him is Deontay Johnson down to Russell Gage. So it just depends on what kind of role he's going to get, what he can do with all that athleticism. And then after McConkey, it's four running backs in this tier that all have different red flags. Like Jalen Wright for me has to land in an outside zone scheme. He has to lean in a Shanahan system. That's where he's going to be really successful. If he's not landing in that type of environment, or if he goes to like a, I don't know, Tampa Bay or something where he's not going to be a workhorse, he's a guy I like a lot less. But as of right now, I think he has the highest ceiling of this group if you get him in that, Miami Dolphins system, right? In the Shane, like this is a system chasing play here with Jalen Wright. After that, you have Braylon Allen, which if he gets day two draft capital, I think at some point in his career, especially with how young he is, he will get a chance to be a starter. He might be terrible. He might be AJ Dillon. But I think there's a world where he's viewed as a high touch running back, like a Najee Harris, like a Ramondre Stevenson, like a James Conner. What scares me to hell with Braylon Allen is just the top end speed, right? He didn't run the 40, which was like just affirming what we were already afraid of based on the film. So that's the worry. But at 6'1", 235, Braylon Allen does have really good size that you'd like to see. Work true workhorse size, where if he does go day two, I would imagine the team has talked themselves into treating Braylon Allen like a workhorse back. Just don't expect these big monster, breakaway runs. And that's why you have the Najee, the James Conner type of comps there. But 29 receptions as a junior, 7.2% target share, very, very solid. Very, very solid. And he kind of has that unicorn, like late career Leonard Fournette type of usage path that I can see for Braylon Allen. Marshawn Lloyd, fun prospect, does have some scary stuff with transferring. Kind of a later breakout, didn't do a ton as a receiver, but a nice breakaway runner. His range of comps for me is Ryan Matthews to Damian Williams. Probably going to go day three. Blake Corum, I'm just not excited about. My comp for him is Ronald Jones. Just did not see enough as a receiver. He is really good from a BMI standpoint, but he is undersized. So it's like an undersized grinder. It's like the best version of that we've gotten is Kenneth Walker. And Walker did so much more in school than Blake Corum did. Blake Corum never beat Donovan Edwards out clean. The 4.54 is good, not great. So there's some things, I don't know. The late declare has me weirded out on him. So Corum's at the bottom of this list for me. Devontae Walker and Jermaine Burton are vastly different guys, but they're the same archetype. Their journeys have just been different. Jermaine Burton is a downfield playmaker, rarely drops. Devontae Walker was a small school guy that was insanely dominant from day one in the MAC conference. So that's where, you get kind of worried. And then as a fifth year, essentially, because he had a late start to school because of COVID. So this is, Devontae Walker is a very old prospect at the wide receiver position, and while he was great everywhere, I mean, even 23.2% target share as a fifth year at UNC, he only has 8 games against Power Five competition. So that's where you get a little bit worried. But I like Devontae Walker more than most. I do think he showed enough at Kent State of what he could do if he wasn't relied on to play this deep threat role, which UNC pretty much, I think, had to rely on with him because of the late start, because some of the NCAA violations. So it was like Devontae Walker came into the season late. They just had to throw him out there, and he's really fast. So they're like, hey, we have Drake May, just run. So that's the narrative you're buying into there with Devontae Walker. Last few guys here, Malik Washington. If we're going to talk about fifth-year receivers, that's the one that I want to bet on, because that's what we're looking at with Pearsall, with Leggett, and with Malik Washington. Other guys in this class too, but Malik Washington's the one that just had the biggest and best ceiling year. Like, I know everyone wants to get excited about Xavier Leggett. Only 23% target share as a fifth year, and did nothing for 4 years before that, versus Malik Washington as a junior, 16.8% target share at Northwestern, then a 24.2% target share as a senior at Northwestern, then transfers to Virginia and leads the country in yards after catch and missed tackles forced, and posts a 34.8, 35% target share. Dude, that's unfathomable. That's video game numbers. 35% target share in the ACC. Elite 3.15 yards per out run. Malik Washington is that dude if you're going to bet on somebody. And he looks like that Antonio Brown type of build. 5'9", 191. He's not going to beat you with size, but he beats you everywhere else and can be used all over the field. Insanely good with the ball in his hand. Just explosive. Big fan of Malik Washington once we get into the late second round. Ricky Pearsall is there because of what he did as a junior. Really good junior year from Ricky Pearsall at Arizona State, playing with Jaden Daniels. 21.4% target share in an offense with Rashad White, who was a really good receiving back in his even in his college days. So Ricky Pearsall has the good junior year, but then 16.1% senior year, 22.6% fifth year. It was kind of just like he hit his peak as a junior and then just kind of stayed there for 2 years. And the fifth year guys, I mean, we have not, I mean, the sample size is very low because we're entering, right, the weird COVID stuff and transfer portal stuff is still kind of in here. So for Pearsall and Washington and even Leggett, it's like the fifth year, it's terrifying because we don't have precedent for it, but I'm not going to call it as much of a death sentence as it probably should be on paper if you just run the numbers on it. And then Jalen Polk is just a guy I think is a toolsy, fun, could potentially play an X role if he develops. There were times where he was the X over Odunze at Washington. So there's things I think to like with Jalen Polk at 6'1", 203, probably going to go day three, put a nice upside profile. I have Spencer Rattler projected to go day three, but now I'm starting to see a mock day two, so I might need to move him up because quarterback and tight end and running back are the places where we look at draft capital a lot more than we do with receiver. But for Spencer Rattler, he's 23 years old already, did have 5 years in college. Each year he kind of had an excuse or some kind of problem that he had to work through. So maybe you say, okay, he's faced all this adversity and played good. I'm not going to say great, not elite, but like good despite all these different situations at Oklahoma and South Carolina. And that he learned a lot in terms of his like off the field approach and mindset. He had some issues with that early in his college career, and it seems like those got fixed. So it's like he's toolsy, size is good, had some good years at school, has been on some radars for people for a long time. You could talk yourself into Rattler, and he's definitely a guy I want to take in the third round. Absolutely. I'll hit on a couple more here, but we are getting to the upside range where it's very toolsy, fun wide receivers, or it's running backs with any sort of receiving profile, which is why you have the Will Shipley, Bucky Irving, Dylan Laub tier at the end of the third round for me. Draft capital will be something I look at, but I do like Bucky Irving. I think Bucky Irving's getting really pushed down because of the 4.55 40, which is fine, but he did so good in college that it's that 2023 season for Bucky Irving is pretty phenomenal. It's hard to look past that, even if he's not the fastest guy. Audric Estime for me is one that I've got a lot of questions about. Same with Ben Sinnott. But Audric Estime, to me, he looks like the most well-rounded running back in this class. 5% target share as a junior. He has the size at 5'11", 221. This guy's a bowling ball. He hit 20 miles per hour on an 80-yard run against NC State and ran a 4.55 40 at his pro day. So the 4.71 at the combine, I think, is just something where you're getting a discount on Estime. If he ends up being a Gus Edwards, fine. If he ends up being a Dante Foreman, fine. But those are guys that can potentially get roles in an offense. And I know there was a lot of hype for a guy like Dante Foreman when he was coming out of school as well. So that's a comp I have for Estime. You know, just really big bowling ball runner. And then, I don't know, I'm intrigued by the 5% target share as a junior for Audric Estime. And I like the way he looks as a pass catcher. So he's a guy I'm interested in. Could be another like AJ Dillon potentially, but we're, you know, in the third round, mid to late third round. So it is what it is. I think that's everything I'm going to cover today on this draft board. The honorable mentions and ones that I know you guys are going to be in the comments flaming me about are Roman Wilson. I'm not a big Roman Wilson guy, even though I do have him in my fourth round. Brendan Rice, Jacob Cowing, Johnny Wilson. There's some guys I really like in this class, like Taj Washington and Theo Johnson and Kamani Vidal. But like, I'm not in on Malachi Corley. So there's an interesting group of names in the fourth round. More likely than not, these guys are busts, right? They're fourth round picks. But I think there's things that you can chase that can get you excited with like a Brendan Rice, with a Johnny Wilson, if you want to start crafting a narrative of how they break out and why their college numbers weren't the best and why some of their testing was questionable and all that kind of stuff. So if you guys want to keep the conversation going, start workshopping takes with us, hit the link in the description, join the Discord channel, hop in there, join the conversations, join startups with us. We launch startups every once in a while. I think I'm now up to 10 Double Move Sports startups over the last couple of years. So hit that link, join the Discord, join the conversation, throw your takes in there. And let's just keep the conversation going. Appreciate y'all listening and watching. We'll see you next time. Peace.